All right. Afternoon, everybody. Thanks for hanging in there with us today. This is a very exciting story of VIDAA, you know, that I'm excited to talk a little bit about here. From the company, we've got Jim, who's the CEO of the company. You know, Jim, thanks a lot for coming, first of all. I know you're just back from Australia, so appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure. I wouldn't miss it.
So there may be a few folks in the room that are a little bit new to the story. If you wouldn't mind just taking a couple minutes kind of running through the story, and then we'll jump into some more of the more detailed questions.
Yeah. So fundamentally, VIDAA is a regenerative tissue company. And what we do is it's a skin graft on a big level, but it's very tissue sparing. So we take less than 20% of what you would normally take for a skin graft. And then we disaggregate the cells, put it in a buffering enzyme solution, and it's a spray-on. And that is very accelerated healing, is what you expect. We have currently a burn indication. We have two other indications that are going in for a PMA supplement this next month, one for soft tissue repair and one for vitiligo. So I'll stop there and let you cue me as you.
Okay. Well, I mean, we'll go into that in a second here. But again, Jim, you know, a lot of experience in the space. You're on the board for a while. What is it that you saw about VIDAA that was so appealing to you? I mean, I'm assuming you really didn't need to take this job, given your track record, but you decided to step in. What was it you saw here that was so exciting?
You know, fundamentally, this is a novel technology. Although it's got a long history, it actually, if you remember the Bali bombings in, 20 years ago, they all came to Australia, and actually this technology was pioneered at that time. It wasn't ready for market yet. But what I saw 18 months ago when I joined the board was a great technology that had an approval in burns, which is a relatively smaller market, but it was really performing well, and the clinical data was great in terms of healing and tissue sparing. And then I saw these other two indications in this expanding market, and it's a U.S. business at the moment. And I just saw incredible opportunity and a very strong balance sheet to do it. So if you combine that, you don't see that much these days where you have something really novel. And one other thing, reimbursement is already in place.
Yep.
So that's a really big combo, and it looked like I would have a great amount of fun doing it.
Oh, yeah. Got it. Got it. Okay. Yeah. I can see the excitement on your face. Talk a little bit about Q3. I mean, that burn business did really well. What was it that drove some of that growth there, and what did you see specifically from a volume perspective?
Well, you know, what we've been, you know, what one of the things we measure in it, we're using looking at U.S. burn centers. That's, you know, roughly 145 burn centers. And what we measure is, you know, how often they use it and adopt it because fundamentally, once a month, you know, once a quarter, once a month, once a week, multiple times a week. So we can see the adoption occurring. And what we saw in Q3 was that phenomena as physicians would move from that once a quarter, once a month, once a week pattern. So that is just, it's an underlying adoption behavior as they get more comfortable using it. Fundamentally, this healing issue is a big deal 'cause we sell RECELL kit for about $6,000, and that is paid for in a DRG. And what the hospitals are finding is the patients are healing so much faster that economically it works for them. And obviously, if it's healing faster, it's working for the patient. And that's really, you know, you win for the patient, you win for the economics in the hospital, and you've got a really great combination.
Yeah, for sure. What about from a, you know, a share-taking perspective, you know, in terms of the typical treatment approach to these burns? I mean, what are you seeing among these 145 centers? I mean, you're in almost all the centers at this point. You know, how is the adoption going as far as RECELL goes?
Well, so reflective of what I just described, we're getting adoption. We certainly are taking share. We don't quite approach it in that fashion.
Okay.
We want to, you know, every patient that's eligible for RECELL, we'd like to capture.
Sure.
But it, you know, so the relative share gain, which we're obviously gaining, I don't know who the loser is at the moment. So obviously somebody is because, in fact, burn admits are rather stable.
Yep.
So therefore, we have to be. But what it is, it's very fundamental. Physicians are getting confidence. We give case support and training. We do an enormous amount of training. And that is, you know, that takes our time, and of course, it takes their time as well, the hospital time. So longer term, they get more comfortable as the basically the pandemic turnover and churn of staff.
Right.
Diminishes.
Got it. What about on the type of burn side? Are you seeing mild, moderate, severe? Is there bigger burns you're doing more of, or more mid-size?
We certainly do big burns. It's something that is technically we don't promote per se because you can't really study it, so you can't really get an indication on an 85% burn patient, for example. That said, it happens because there's no other alternative, and this healing aspect really matters. So what we're seeing is more and more burns that are in the sub 15% total body surface area category.
Okay.
And that's really the majority of the market in the first place. So
got it. Okay. Which is actually a good thing to hear. So
yeah.
And I know another thing that's hamstrung the company historically, or actually the last several quarters, is the ability to get into the centers and get clinicians trained and caregivers trained. Is that still a headwind you're facing?
Not at all. I don't think there's any material effect blocking us from access to the hospital, being able to go to a VAC committee if we need to, the training element, and being able to support cases. All of that, we have very good access. And here and there, we'll run into a bump, but nothing material.
Okay. And what was contemplated in the Q4 guide, specifically from a volume perspective?
From a volume point of view, we expect a continuation of our current adoption rate.
Okay.
And so that, and of course, that led to an uptick for our annual guidance, as you know.
Got it. Okay. And then how about Japan? What do you expect? I know we got the first order in Q3, and now Q4, we're going to see a little bit more of it. What are your expectations there for Q4?
We've got a lot to learn still about the adoption process in Japan. What I know and was really encouraging to me was that we shipped our first stocking order in September.
Yep.
In October, without a specific number, I did learn that we did literally dozens of cases, which is very encouraging because I've lived in Japan, you might remember, and managed businesses there for years. That rapidity of adoption behavior from the first stocking order in Japan is a bit uncommon. So I'm quite optimistic, but I have a little bit more to learn about how fast that's going to go.
Okay. I mean, how do we think about that business? You've got a $30, $40 million burn business in the U.S. Japan's about a third the size of the U.S. I mean, should this be in 3-4 years a $10 million business for you?
It certainly could be a $10 million business, remembering that we share the margin with Cosmetech, our partner there, and we get 40% of the reimbursement price. So That will diminish what we get, but of course we don't spend much getting it.
I was going to say, that's almost all right down to the bottom line, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Got it. What about other OUS markets? I know you talked a little bit on the webinar recently about that. I don't want to get too cranked up on it, but it seems like, there's a big opportunity out there.
Well, there is. We see that there's a big international potential, probably in the order of 20 countries, not more.
Okay.
How we do that is really a task for 2023. Our real priority in 23, of course, is launching soft tissue.
Yep.
That is really where the growth is going to come from.
Okay. Okay. So speaking of soft tissue and vitiligo, for that matter,
mm-hmm.
you're going to file by the end of this year, that's what you said.
We're going to file during December.
December, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. So what are the next steps from there after you file with them? I mean, what kind of interaction are you expecting? And then you're expecting kind of middle of next year approval. What could make that get pushed a little bit or even come sooner than expected?
Well, let's take them separately. So soft tissue repair has breakthrough device designation. So what we expect is a 180-day approval cycle. The interaction with FDA, we get a more senior reviewer.
Yep.
They don't stop the clock without a significant deficiency, which we do not expect. So if you just do that clock, that suggests a July 1 expectation on our part.
Yep.
And we're planning for that. So we'll be expanding our sales organization, and we'll give some detail of that in our February call. But we're going to be expanding it during Q2. And there's some real interesting synergies there if we have time to get to them. With vitiligo, we have also breakthrough separately a designation. We'll therefore expect approval in June of next year. It has a different path to go. We have to establish reimbursement for the physician office side of care.
Okay.
So that will take us, we estimate, that'll take us to have it effective till January 25.
Okay.
So in the meantime, we'll do some cash pay, we'll do some physician-initiated studies to just really more robustly develop our podium presence so that when we get to market, we're really prepared. So it's going to be a remaining project, so to speak, in terms of market development for next 18 months following approval.
Okay. So talk a little bit about that confidence that you have in soft tissue and getting that approval. You know, I know it's a breakthrough device, which is great. We've seen other breakthrough devices get delayed, but you've got a, you know, basically an approved product already for burns. So is it partially because of that, or is there some other reason why you feel so confident in that approval timeframe?
There's a couple of reasons. Well, first of all, yes, we've got approval. We have an extraordinary performance on sort of what you would describe as customer complaints. They're so incredibly low.
Yeah.
So that gives us a lot of confidence. Secondly, the clinical outcome for the soft tissue repair study was just exceptional. And we had a p-value of 0.025 that we had to meet, and we beat it. And by beating it, that is really a healing definition. So I think what we'll see is a response from FDA that is consistent with our other interactions with them. And they will certainly have questions, and they should. Of course, that's what their job is. But in the end, we think we'll stay on the clock, and we'll get approval on schedule with that 180 days.
Okay. And so, you know, help us understand the soft tissue opportunity versus burn. How big, like, who are those patients? How do you get to them, and how big is that market?
So let's start with, economically, it's roughly 3 to 4 times bigger. It sits in level 1, 2 trauma centers.
Yep.
The synergy is really rather interesting. Half of the burn centers are level 1 or 2 trauma centers. We will instantly get access to that broader indication on the day of approval, and we have reimbursement. Secondly, in the level 1 and 2 trauma centers sits 25% of the burn market we don't call on. And so when we launch our sales team in expansion, which we plan to do in Q2, one of the things they get to do is access those hospitals, level 1 and 2 trauma centers, and begin that VAC process for burns, which will naturally get the product approved for the hospital. So when the indication expansion occurs, which we expect July 1, we'll hit the ground running. It won't be we get approval July 1 and we have start having to wait to have access to do those cases. To think about the type of cases there are, think about them in 2 categories. So, you know, there's kind of the things that a physician does to a patient, so to speak, and what they repair. So what they do is might be like degloving or necrotizing bacteria where they cut away tissue and that has to be repaired with a skin graft. That's a category.
Okay.
A different category would be traumatic injury, you know, which is they're repairing what has happened to the patient and they need a skin graft. So really all forms of skin grafting for those big categories are what RECELL is applicable for. And really what that means, it's a really broad label and it gives us a lot of access and that level 1, 2 trauma center and combined with the burn center.
Okay. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on this, on these? So you're in 140 burn centers, roughly 145.
Mm-hmm.
70 of those are level 1 trauma centers already.
Mm-hmm.
And then 25% of those you don't, or 25 of those, I don't know what the exact number was, but that you don't even have.
25% of the burn market, of the patients who need skin grafting for burns, are treated, they're sub 30% total body surface area, and they're treated in level 1 and 2 trauma centers. So our sales force currently doesn't call on them.
Okay.
So we get an expansion of market opportunity of something that we've already demonstrated very well that we didn't have market access to by virtue of our sales structure.
Understood. Okay. All right. Yep. That's really helpful. And thanks for clearing that up. How many reps are you going to add for trauma?
Let me say it this way. We'll be adding them for the trauma burns combo.
Okay.
So that's kind of a reorganizing of our sales team. We haven't established the precise number yet. We'll certainly give that number in February.
Yeah.
But in the order of as much as a complete doubling, so in that order.
Okay.
One of the things we, so to speak, get to do is, you know, 5 kits pays for the contribution margin for a sales rep.
Right.
So what we know is we have experience with that. And we have experience actually in a harder scenario because when we launched in burns, we were unknown. So we know the number of months it's likely to take for them to get to five. So that investment that we make will cause our expense-to-revenue ratio, for example, to peak in Q3 and then steadily decline.
Right.
So we'll get a return rather quickly from that expansion because the market's there, reimbursement's there, we have the know-how to do it. So I'm really optimistic about the year.
Do you get that return in Q1 of 2024, or is it that quick?
My expectation is the average will be that quick on that five, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And I don't want to, you know, I want to make sure expectations are in the right spot for next year. I mean, what you're going to get the approval, you know, knock on wood, July 1st. You're going to have the sales force all kind of all ready to go, but there's still a you know, a trialing period and a training period. So what should we expect for trauma in the back half of, or sorry, soft tissue in the back half of next year?
It's a little bit ahead for us to give revenue guidance yet.
Yeah.
That said, when July 1st happens, we'll already be trained in those 70 centers that are in the burn market.
Yep.
We'll have access to those indications immediately. Secondly, by starting in April 1st, we'll already be in a number of hospitals where we're seeking product approval through the VAC committee. So we'll have a lot of momentum in Q3. You'll really see it in 2024, you know.
Yeah.
Because we'll ramp in Q3, in Q4 of next year with soft tissue. But 2024 will, on a run rate basis, it'll really be an impact.
Will the revenue per case potentially be higher in soft tissue?
It actually, perhaps not.
Really?
Okay. And the reason is, in large burns, we'll see more than one kit per case.
Yep.
In soft tissue, we'll treat a lot of smaller wounds that fundamentally just need one kit.
Okay. Okay. Appreciate that. I guess the other, you know, switching over to vitiligo for a second, you're taking the prudent approach as far as reimbursement goes. And I think the subtlety that's missed here is your time from approval to reimbursement is much shorter than others. And I think it's because of breakthrough device and other things. But why not go cash pay? I think there's a lot of folks out there that are like, "I don't like, I mean, I got freckles. I don't like these things." You know, I think there's a lot of folks with vitiligo that would just love this.
I think that's right on one hand. Cash pay, we will certainly be doing, but it's a rather inefficient sales model.
Yeah.
Most importantly, we have to get reimbursement in place for the physician. This will be a physician office environment.
Yep.
So one of the things we, so to speak, focused ourselves on is getting reimbursement as a fundamental market maker. And that fundamental market maker will need continued activity so that the podium still stays active. So we will be doing cash pay. Won't be a big revenue impact, but it'll be a notable scientific impact.
Okay.
And we're also going to do it so we can optimize patient selection. That matters as well. So early cases, we want to be very successful, so we want to make sure we focus on that. So while reimbursement is cooking, so to speak, we're going to be very active developing the market.
Can you size the vitiligo market, both, you know, where you think, like in totality and then where you think this fits the best?
Well, I have some data that help us see that. You know, literally millions of people in the United States have it.
Yeah.
Like in the order of 3 or 4 million. So it's big. What is most interesting to us is our most recent market research, 438,000 patients sought treatment for the vitiligo last year, which is an enormous market because really none of those treatments are very effective.
Yep.
It happens in our trial that it was against a control. And at 6 months, where we had a responder group of about 80%, the control actually had a zero responder to the standard of care today at 6 months. So that is such a divergent outcome. We just know that if we get it right, we're really going to have a big winner.
Okay. What, I mean, you know, just maybe size that up or frame it up a little bit from a dollar perspective.
Well, ultimately, this is a couple billion-dollar market.
Vitiligo.
Vitiligo.
Okay.
Yeah. Ultimately. You take those 438 and you multiply them by 6,000 and you get $2.5 billion.
Yeah.
So that's one form of math. Okay. There may be some changes in terms of how we segment the market as we get closer to it, and we of course will share.
Hey, even a slice of that would be massive.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Yep. Okay. What are the next steps on the reimbursement side of things for vitiligo?
Submission to AMA CPT, and that there's a meeting in the first quarter of the year.
Okay.
And we'll submit to, during that time.
Okay. And then what?
It will go through its process. Presume so. There's two stages. You have to get it approved by them,
yeah.
A code that reads on the physician side of service, physician office side of service. That's one stage. Then what will follow that will be the relative valuation, you know, the RUC points, so
yeah.
to speak. And once you have that, we expect to get through all that in time so that we would be in the October announcement for
okay.
the January 25.
But, you know, given that you're not going to most likely have reimbursement by Q1 of next year, does
right.
that slow down the process? Will they review products that are not approved yet for a certain indication? Or will
yes.
They will? Okay.
Oh, yes. Actually.
Okay.
Actually, you can apply for, if you start a clinical trial, you can apply for a code.
Okay.
Now, in our case, we've got a vibrant, growing application for burns. We have a soft tissue repair application. We have clinical studies done in burns, soft tissue, and in vitiligo. So we have a very rich base of clinical data and experience that reflects safety and efficacy in the different applications. We have reimbursement both through the DRG inpatient and through transitional pass-through code. So we're in a real strong place, and we have to execute, but
yep.
we're in a strong place.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Are there any kind of, you know, pressure points you think about in terms of reimbursement or commercialization that worry you as far as the new indications go?
Pressure points wouldn't be the right word. It is always, you know, you launch a new product into a new market segment, you always learn new things. We will learn new things. Our ability to adapt, I think, is on us. I don't see many external threats, so to speak, you know, in terms of what might happen that would retard our growth, so to speak. I think that, you know, we will learn something, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like preparing for the unknown.
Right.
That you,
it's impossible. Yeah.
There's only one thing I know, that it's there,
yeah.
and I don't know it, which makes it, what Don Rumsfeld used to say, it's a known unknown that
yeah.
I don't know it.
Right.
So there. Otherwise, it's a very strong formula. You know, you'd like to have a product, you have as much clinical experience as we do, that is so differentiated and helps patients as much as it does, that's fully reimbursed, that's got broad label. I mean, that's a
yeah.
that's an uncommon combination to have right at the beginning.
Got it. Okay. And just a couple minutes left here. Think about the financial profile of this business heading out. I mean, I know it's early. I get it. But I mean, you know, you've been part of some very profitable companies. How can Avita stack up to some of those companies?
Well, it's an aspirational thought, first of all, question.
Yeah.
You know, we start with an 83% gross profit.
Yeah.
And what we're planning to do is weaponize it in the second half of next year. That's
right.
a way to think about it. We're going to use that strength along with our $88 million on our balance sheet to make that investment to grow aggressively and establish RECELL as a standard of care
yep.
for soft tissue reconstructive treatment, repair treatment, rather. So that's a big idea on its own. Along the way, we're going to develop this vitiligo market. And so I think the potential for us to be a very strong growth, profitable business is very high. Execution is really about the company. It's about the team. We have a very strong team. We need to build a stronger team that's bigger. You know,
yeah.
it's one of those, you know, you got to keep paddling.
Yeah, for sure. Okay,
yeah.
Understood. And then in the last minute or so here, just the balance you just mentioned, $88 million. You know, how do you think about that capital deployment over the next, you know, year or two?
Well, what's really great is the plan we're working on would indicate that we'll exit 24 with sufficient cash, presuming we don't need vitiligo new channel.
Right.
Which, of course, we will. So there'll be, on one hand, the cash use during 24 will be quite less than 23.
Yeah.
And we'll exit 24 with very sufficient cash, and we'll have, by our estimates at the moment, very strong, vibrant, growing business. So that puts us in a strong position to have some choices to figure out what the best channel structure will be for vitiligo.
Okay.
And we'll have the momentum of soft tissue repair for at least in two or three more years following. So we've got a really strong pipeline with vitiligo coming on top.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Well, checking the clock, and we're all out of time, so we'll go ahead and cap it there. Jim, thanks so much for all the feedback. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Matt.